It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Falk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. For the final time in 2025, we are doing hot takes. We've got at least a few to get into. Perhaps some will pop up in the live stream. So we're going to get into those. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, Chris Felico. How are you, gentlemen?
Hanging by a thread, Terry. How are you?
I'm okay.
Couldn't have said any better, Jeremy. Barely hanging on by a thread. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not good.
This is the final stretch for the season. You got a one-game cushion. There's a million different things in play. We'll get into some of those. The Astros are one game below us. They're playing the Athletics and the Angels, arguably the easiest schedule of anyone chasing the wild card right now. Not sure who the Yankees have, but they do have a very good cushion. I can't, the math would be really hard for them to slip out of it. And Cleveland is hot as hell. And who else am I missing? I think that's it, actually. Let's see who's going first.
Chris can bat lead off.
All right. So I've got our boy Dougie, and he says, I'll be the one optimist, in which he is. Sox beat the Yankees in the wild card round. I'm not going to rip Doug apart. I love Doug and I love the Sox, but I hate their chances right now. I hate their chances of even making the playoffs. Up one game, had a chance to make it two. We all know what happened last night. But one game with the schedule that we have and the matchups for all the teams that you just said, Terry, gun to my head, I don't know if we're making the playoffs. In fact, I would bet we probably aren't. And if we do, we may not even be the second wild card. We'll probably be the third wild card. And you know what? Maybe Doug's planning on the Yankees winning the AL East and somehow getting the top seed of the teams that have to play, in which we would play them. But I don't even know if I'd have confidence in beating them at that point.
Jeremy.
Yeah, Chris, what's Doug's last name again? You didn't announce it as part of the tweet.
That was intentional. I'll give it a shot.
You thought you were going to get away with it.
Aitchison.
Oh, my God. Anyways.
He got it.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's optimistic to think we're going to get the second wild card. I think that is the third most probable. I think the likelihood is that we miss the playoffs or get the third wild card. I just think, generally speaking, that this young team is just gripping the bat too tight. And besides Bregman, he's just started hitting again in the Rays series a little bit. There's no veteran that's like carrying the team. And, you know, it just, to me, it seems like it's going the wrong way. Young roster. You're so far down the depth chart with the injuries. You're relying on guys like Eaton and, you know, Nathaniel Lowe, who was absolutely god awful yesterday, and Wong, who still hasn't hit a home run this year. So it, to me, it's just, there's too many holes. We're missing too many key pieces. It's a young roster. They're just, they feel to me to be way too tight, and it spells disaster, as I predicted before the Rays series.
So if we play the Yankees, almost certainly we are going to be on the road in Yankee Stadium. They have three games above us right now. They got 88 wins. We got 85. So if we make the playoffs, we are going, well, if we stay in the current seed, we're going to New York. If we slip to the sixth seed, which is the third wild card, we would likely, who would we play? Let's see, the weakest, we would probably play the AL Central team. So that's going to be either the Guardians or the Tigers. The Tigers right now are in free fall mode. They lost at least two games to the Atlanta Braves this weekend. Theoretically, that should have been a decent matchup for them. They lost. I think the weekend before they played the Guardians and got swept. Now, the Tigers schedule this week, they're playing the Guardians to start after, again, they were just recently swept, and then they have the Red Sox. So that's something to watch next to the Red Sox series themselves. And, of course, we're playing Detroit at the end of the week. Here's the interesting thing. If Cleveland gets ahead of Detroit, it could mean the Red Sox and the Tigers are essentially going to be playing for that final wild card spot. The Tigers swept the Red Sox earlier this year. If they just win one of the last three games against us, they will have the tiebreaker. And they're the only team, essentially, that's still in the race that does have the tiebreaker. The Rangers did, but they had a terrible week and they're out of it. So we have the tiebreaker over the Astros. We have it over the Guardians. We do not have it over the Tigers. So that's the really compelling thing to watch this week. And I don't know if the Tigers get it together or not. Like, that's a team that sounds completely demoralized. All their podcasts, I've listened to a couple just today. They're all in agony. They think they're probably going to slip out of it, and maybe they will. I don't know. So
is Scooble lined up for the Sox series? Do you know?
I can find out. Crochet is going to pitch against the Blue Jays for his final start of the year.
To line him up with the first game of the.
Yeah. And honestly, I think you want your better pitchers facing the Blue Jays here. All right, Tigers probably. Well,
if you can go win the Blue Jays series, you take some of the pressure off, depending on how the Tigers are. You know, if you, well, I'm not even going to say because it's not going to happen.
Okay, so Scooble would likely line up for a Sunday start. So that would be the final game of the.
Oh my God.
That's, I can see it already. Oh. Sox need the game. To make the playoffs, Scooble comes out and just shoves.
What is that, Scooble versus a bullpen game? That'd be so Boston Red Sox.
Well, you know, it could be against Crochet if we want it to be. Who's pitching for the Red Sox tomorrow? Isn't it Crochet?
No, he's Wednesday.
Oh, never mind. All right, so you would only see Crochet in an absolute code red emergency, probably in 2, 3, 4 innings of relief if it comes to that. I don't know, man, it's coming down to the wire. And let me say this. I still have to address the Yankees playoff aspect of it. But before I do, if you lose game one to the Blue Jays, and it's, who is it? It's, we're facing Gausman. Is it Giolito and Gausman?
I believe so.
Yeah. So the math is so much more favorable if you win that game. If you don't, then it gets pretty dicey. It gets extremely dicey. So we'll see. The playoffs for the Red Sox essentially start tomorrow. Every 100%. Game is a playoff atmosphere.
I was actually thinking about this about an hour ago. I look at each series as a playoff series, and you got to win 2 out of 3, and you'll get in.
Yeah, if they win 2 out of 3 of the both,
they win both series, they're going to get in. They control their own destiny, you know. So,
I mean, they have a good shot of making it even if they go 3-3. It's just sad that I don't have confidence they could even do that right now. I mean, because to be honest, but like you just said, Terry, or it might have been you, Jeremy, I'm sorry, that it's playoffs starting tomorrow. But to be honest, it was playoffs starting last night. And you wouldn't have thought that way, the way that they looked against that Rays team that's out of it, isn't even playing their own ballpark. And you know what, Terry, you bring up a great point. I wasn't even looking at it from the fact of the Tigers being a team that has the tiebreaker, because we've all been just so focused on the Rangers. And when the Rangers fell out, you kind of took a deep breath and said, okay, the math's not on our side in the sense if you hit a tie. But to your point, if the Tigers somehow slip out of the Central and then really kind of free fall but then recover late, I mean, they could be the team that knocks us out. And that, I mean, that doesn't feel good at all.
You're going to have, let's see, who would you have? So Giolito would go Sunday against the Tigers if need be. Connolly early would probably go on Saturday. So who does that line up for Friday against Detroit? Harrison, Kyle Harrison. So that's probably your Detroit lineup. You're going to go Harrison early and then Giolito. I don't know how I feel about that, but and you're getting Scooble on Sunday if necessary. So that's bad. But getting to the potential Yankees matchup, let's say our doomsday outlook right now is completely unfounded and we're definitely a playoff team. I think any scenario where we play the Yankees, it's a toss-up. And you can't hate our chances because we've played so well against them the last couple of years. And you're going to have Crochet game one. So it's going to be in New York. We'll see. I can't say that we're going to beat the Yankees, but I'm not going to sit here and say we definitely would not beat the Yankees.
Here's what I'll say about that. Over the next 6 games, they can completely change how I feel about them right now. So if they go out and they play, you know, athletic, aggressive baseball, they cut down on the stupid mistakes. Duran getting picked off of first base on a hopper into the catcher who easily controlled it, and terrible rundown. Like those stupid mistakes, you can't give away outs in the playoffs. If you play like that this last 6 games, I'll go into that series feeling optimistic. But that's not the way they're playing as we tape right now. So, I mean, assuming they get in, which I think is dangerous to make that assumption. But let's say, you know, they have a game where they score 12 runs. The other starting pitcher just doesn't have it. And they split and they go in 3-3 like Chris suggested. And they kind of limp in. They're going to get steamrolled and it's not going to matter who they're playing. Because this Red Sox team, it matters more about whether they beat themselves or not than who the other team is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll cap it off with this. I feel the same way. They have the opportunity. Like, they're going to be playing 2 teams here that need these games, right? Because Toronto needs it to hold off the Yankees, because the Yankees are surging, as I thought they would. And now every Yankees fan is a Red Sox fan for the next 3 days, because, I mean, they would love if we swept Toronto the way that they're playing, because that would essentially put them in a really good position to win the AL East at that point. So if the Sox can earn their way to October and not back in and actually win and hold off one of these 3 or 4 teams to earn that spot, I feel good about against anyone we play, including the Yankees. However, if we lose miserably, but just teams behind us lose even worse, and that's how we make the playoffs, I think, like you said, Jeremy, we're going to get absolutely steamrolled no matter who we play. The one thing I would caution people, because yes, we have played well the last couple of years against the Yankees, but in September, we have not. I wrote an article about it, and this September was no different in a season where we went, I believe it was 9-4 against them. And I don't like the trajectory of both teams. I think when the Yankees came in there and proved that they could beat us in our house, And that kind of catapulted them. And then that kind of put us off the wagon and in this predicament to start this playoff run and push is a little bit scary, but it's baseball. You're only as good as your next starter. So let's see.
The other thing is that the Yankees have played October baseball. The far majority of that roster's experienced it. They've dealt with the pressure. They've played in the World Series just last year. Bregman, you know, that's our only position player that has any real playoff experience. And sure, he's got a ton, but the October baseball played by the Yankees as compared to the Red Sox, I think that's a huge factor in that series.
Just look at all the number of playoff games Aaron Boone has managed over the last 6 or 7 years compared to Alex Cora. It's just insane. And just for the hell of it, because I love shits and giggles, the Yankees opponents this week, the Chicago White Sox and the Baltimore Orioles. That's how they wrap the year. So
must be nice.
At the start of the year. Yeah.
We're going to get Scooble in an elimination game to end the year. I'm not even going to watch the game.
It's setting up because, like I said, that's the potential tie-breaking game. So
if they lose tomorrow, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to go into a dark place, man. Because it's going to, if they don't get off to a good start in these last six games, it's just going to get even tighter and even tighter, and it's going to end bad, man. It's scary.
Well, I got one question. If you guys think we're going to make the playoffs, let's assume we do. Is it safe that we're all on the same page? It's probably going to be wild card three.
That's what I would think.
I would think so too, because the Astros have such an easy schedule. The Guardians are white hot right now. You know, I don't. And Garrett Crochet hasn't looked good. Let's not forget that. He's
giving up a lot of home runs.
Yeah, and this
keeps
is
you in games, but your ace needs to shut down the other team in those moments. And so he's been good. Hasn't been, you know, except for that one where he gave up four home runs, he hasn't been absolutely terrible. He keeps you in games. But is that what you want to be saying about your highly paid ace? That's what you would say about your 2 and 3 starters. Your count and quality starts with your ace, a true ace. You know, he should be dominating down the stretch. And the last thing I'll say, and I think this goes in all sports, you want to be playing your best baseball, whatever the sport is. You want to be playing your best as you enter the tournament. You don't want to limp in. You want to have momentum. You want to have the pressure off. You want to have like the Guardians now become scary to me about potentially advancing because they are playing their best baseball as it comes down to the tournament. Now we're doing the opposite. Tigers, the same thing. I lower the expectation, even if the Tigers and Sox get in, that they're going to make any hay in the playoffs. It just doesn't typically work that way. And I know baseball is a little bit different because you're just as good as your next day starting pitching. But, you know, from a Red Sox perspective, and I don't know how you feel, but every time there's less than 2 outs and runners in scoring position, I'm expecting like a line drive, step on the bag, double play to end it, or some crazy nonsensical thing where they tag up too early and like they just can't hit runners in scoring position. That's how you win playoff games, and they can't do it. It's unbelievable.
It's 0-2 every count when there's a runner in scoring position or someone on base. It's literally 0-2 the next batter every single time.
And Nathaniel Lowe yesterday, my God.
I am formally issuing Kyle Schwarber an apology for calling Nathaniel Lowe great value Kyle Schwarber. Because it's like it's not even close. You shouldn't even say their names in the same sentence. And we do have Lowe under control through next season. I'd like to say he'll be non-tendered. Like
they have to upgrade that position. They have to. I'm so sick of talking about first base. I'm so sick of it. They got to go out and get a veteran to fill that spot. Don't do this to me, Terry. I'm already in a bad space.
Casas is your first baseman next year. That's what you're going to hear all winter.
Well, that's kind of rehab, because the thing is we could say that if the guy doesn't recover, he's not. And it's not an injury we can just assume he's going to recover. I mean, a torn patella tendon for someone his size, frame and weight is not an easy road back. And not that I don't want him to come back and be healthy, kind of don't, but not that I don't. Go get me Pete Alonso if he doesn't.
If he opts out. That's the guy I wanted more than Bregman, believe it or not. All right, so that
I was not prepared to talk Casas today. I can't do it. We got to move on. I can't. You guys are going to just drive me nuts.
So it kind of ties into mine here. Mine comes from someone who calls himself on Twitter Hazy New England DDD 6.9%. Don't forget the percent. A lot going on in the handle, a lot going on in his bio. He's 30. He's wifed up. He's into music, pets. His pronouns are he, him. He's a garden enthusiast. And anyway, his take, I think we should have not traded Raffy. If Raffy Devers is still on your roster, you're minimum in the first wild card, possibly in the division race. And you guys were just saying, we can't get runs across. We can't get runs across. We're stranding runners. You don't have your big power threat. You don't have your big game bat in that lineup. You shipped him for nothing. And we've had holes basically since August. We got by in July. We went on that torrid winning streak where we got, I think, as high as, what, 16, 17 games above 500? But yeah, if you got Devers on this team, I feel so much better. And he just brings an energy about him that's contagious. This whole team fires up when Devers has these big moments, and he's not here right now. And you've got a lot of holes. You've got a roster and a lineup that is extremely undefined. And if you guys are right, especially Chris, and we miss the postseason because we have a bad final week, Devers is going to be an elephant in the room topic next Monday morning.
Yeah, it's really tough to disagree with that. I would just add the caveat that are we going to get the Devers who is demanding to play DH? Would he have agreed to play first base here? Answers we'll never get. But either way, you can't dispute the fact that even if he is your everyday DH and kind of locks up roster flexibility by doing so, having him in this lineup, I don't think we're talking as negatively as we are with the runners in scoring position issue if he's on this team. He'll at least look, he's not going to get, he doesn't like a 600 hitter with runners in scoring position. But the thing that Raffy was always good at was getting the ball in the air with a man on third and less than two outs, you know. Infield's back, ground ball, scores the run. And then he'd have the big hit because that's who he is. And he, you know, we'd have a few more solo home runs as well. I mean, there's no disputing that. There's none. It's a tough answer because he clearly had a hold of the roster flexibility, refusing to move off the DH spot.
Now, one thing real quick, it came out after that Devers was willing to play first base if the Red Sox would have committed to him at that position long-term, and Breslow would not do it. Devers threw Breslow a bone and said, I'll do it if you commit to me long-term. And again, he wouldn't do it. So there's that angle, but let's just run with this angle.
Well, then that pisses me off.
If the first base thing is true, then that's inconceivable considering the Casas situation. To me, that would have been a no-brainer to commit to him. I would have, again, whether Casas was hurt at that point or not, I would have either drove him to the hospital for surgery or would have drove him home so he never had to play first base and he'd still have a good knee. So that's that point as far as him on first base. It's easy to say we'd be better with Devers, but and I do think he puts the ball in play better. And I think he would draw more fear from the pitchers, right? And I think he would probably draw walks. He would create opportunities for people behind him, in front of him, whatever you want to say. However, Rafael Devers in his last 15 games, because let's face it, last 15 games is what's going to cost us making the playoffs more than likely if we don't make it. He's batting 127, 55 at-bats, has 21 strikeouts with six RBIs. So I don't know if that's enough to have fixed our RBI woes, not for nothing. The team he was on was in a playoff race for a little bit, and they're not in a playoff race anymore. So he had his opportunity to help the San Francisco Giants make the playoffs with a Mets team in front of them who literally would have handed to him if they just took it. So I don't necessarily know if we would be better off. I think it's easy to say we would. The old Rafael Devers, yes, but Rafael Devers has not been Rafael Devers this year. I know he's got 32 home runs, 105 RBIs, better than anyone on the Red Sox at this point, but that's not hard because this is not a real offense. So would he make it better? It's possible. But the statistics and the sample size that I've seen, it's not the slam dunk that we're making it out to be.
So this is Terry putting me in a box and focus, making me discuss Casas. Because if it's this is really simple for me. If that's true, and I
it's true.
You know, I don't imagine Terry making that up, then the only logical explanation are one of two things. One, they're committed to Casas being the first baseman, and I'm going to lose my mind. Or two, they're committed to go getting a right-hand at-bat after the season to fill that spot, which does not seem realistic considering what I've said about cheap John Henry and Lion Sam Kennedy. So for me, this is a distinct back to Casas. They didn't commit to Devers at first because of Tristan Casas. You have got to be kidding me.
That would be insane.
That is insanity. That is so short-sighted. It's relying on a player with no track record, an injury history. And I'm not rooting against Casas. Don't get me wrong. I'm just based on what I see, eyeball test. I mean, it's just that really pisses me off because Devers in this lineup down the stretch would have been a difference maker. And by the way, I haven't followed it too closely. He stayed healthy. So, you know, I mean, it's just extremely frustrating if that's what happened.
Well, what it tells you, and I think you made this point not too long ago, Jeremy, is that the mantra of the Sox now is get rid of big contracts, sign them while they're young and cheap, and extend them. And when I say if what you're saying, Terry, is true, I believe what you're saying is true, just so we're on the same page. With that being said, if it's true, that basically confirms all of that. Because to even have a realm where you're willing to ride Casas over Devers, who's the highest paid Red Sox in team history, just goes to show that the idea was to get rid of him, save the money the whole time, and then look at Casas no different than we're looking at Roman Anthony, Meyer, Campbell, fill in the blank with all these young guys that came up that we had all these hopes in, sign them young, Rafaela, and extend them and try and just get them on the cheap, a la Brave.
That's, yeah. Anyways, so our last take is from Chris Wolf at the letter R Sox Watcher. Says Sedain has vastly improved his ABs of the season. He might not walk much, but he's nearly doubled his walk total from last year and drastically lowered his strikeouts. Most improved player award should be his. So look, I'm a fan of the contract. I'm a huge fan of the player. You know, he made another great catch last night. His creating roster flexibility by willing to play second base and at an extremely high level, by the way, all pluses. His month of July was absolutely epic. And it really was, if you had to pick one player to kind of launch that month, it was Sedain Rafael, in my opinion. Can't, you know, now until recently, until the Rays series, he was a black hole in the lineup for a really, really long time. He has improved, but I think that just goes to show you how bad he was offensively with essentially you could just get him out by throwing sliders off the plate, and his lack of plate discipline, you know, just killed him in 2024. And while it's been better, to me, it's not improved enough to say that he's the most improved player on the Boston Red Sox. For me, that's Brian Baio. Brian Baio has been extremely consistent. He's become a legitimate number two starter, and I think in most rotations, certainly in ours, and I count on him to pitch six innings, two runs, quality start every time out, and he's largely done that. And I expect, if we get in a playoff series, for him to get the ball in game two, and I expect him to give us a chance to win. He seemed to settle down with some of the mental stuff was going through, where if it went bad, error behind him, he kind of imploded. He's really gotten past that from what I've seen, where some stuff happens and he kind of just gets back on the mound and he's focused and he gets the next guy out instead of worrying what's behind him. So to me, the most improved player in the Boston Red Sox is Brian Baio. Rafaela still needs to have a pretty big jump forward to be considered, in my opinion, an above average offensive player that should be hitting in the middle of the lineup until he stops swinging at balls and striking out. The way he does, to me, he's a bottom three hitter, nine spot guy. Now, with that said, because of the way he plays defense at two positions, he's on this team. He's going to be on this team probably for the majority of that contract, if not the whole thing. That's what I would want. Set it and forget it guy. But I don't consider him the large leap forward at this point. So that's my response to our Sox watcher.
Yeah, I would agree with what you said, Jeremy. You know, he was already a good defender, right? And he's only improved. And great, he's already defender. Improved on that, but like, he already was a good defender. So if there was an award for most useful player, I would say that, because I mean, you're able to put him anywhere and he's going to give you a gold glove defense. And let's face it, he's saved our skin quite a bit this season with some of the plays he's made defensively. I don't necessarily know if I would agree behind the plate if he's improved. If we were looking just strictly at the first half of the season, you might be able to make that argument. But it's just not enough behind the plate for me to say he's overall the most improved player. And I would agree with you. I would say it is Brian Baio, because coming into the season, I think most Red Sox fans with Brian Baio were like, can he even be a three or a four at this point? And we probably would have accepted it if he cemented himself as a three or a four and you just knew what you had. But he quickly elevated his game and his play to a point where he is the bona fide number two. And the fact that Giolito has kind of been very wishy-washy the last month and a half immediately puts Brian Baio as the clear number two in my mind on this team. And for the most part, with the exception of his last start, he's met that calling. So I would agree with you.
And I think going down the stretch, I mean, who do you trust more in their respective starts this week, Baio or Crochet? I think Baio has more left in the tank.
See, here's the thing. The expectation for Crochet is like seven innings, one run. And so when you see six innings, three runs, you're like a little disappointed. To me, I think Crochet is going to pitch well in that game. But I expect the same for Baio. Baio has, to me, ascended to expecting that from him on a start-to-start basis. So your point's well-founded, but for me, it's still Crochet.
All right. Getting over – or go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say I caught a lot of flack. I figured it might have been from Charlie. As far as I think I said that I trusted Baio going into his last start even more than Crochet going to his last start. And I kind of still stand by that because, you know, pending obviously the defense, specifically the infield, looking like a Little League Mickey Mouse team, the thing that I still like about Baio for the most part is he gets so many ground balls and is able to generate so many double plays that he goes six, seven innings for the most part. Whereas with Crochet, yeah, if he's striking out people and everything's going his way, yeah, he can go seven innings. But as soon as he starts serving up home runs and he starts, you know, struggling behind, on the mound, that's where he can get himself into trouble. And that's when all of a sudden a seven innings turns into a five or six. And it's kind of tough because our bullpen is set up where you turn it over seven, eight, nine. You start throwing in five or six, getting in the bullpen, it's a completely different story for this team.
Getting back to the hot take with Rafaela. How many home runs do you think he's hit since the All-Star break? Just guess.
Five.
I'm going to say three or four.
Two home runs. 14 runs batted in. 10 walks. Oh. 10 walks. Woof. That's what, 1.3 runs batted in per week since then, if you do the math. And, you know.
And you know he's come up with plenty of opportunity, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, and his, for 4 or 5 weeks, he was Mookie Betts. That's who he was on this team. That's what he was doing. Just a machine. Balls going over the fence. Multiple walk-offs. Rifling that ball. And I think that's one of the reasons Breslow didn't really make a move for a bat at the end of July. Because he's like, well, we've got a number of guys performing well. Romy's killing it. Rafael is killing it. Bregman was doing pretty good. And so, you know, there was a lot of fool's gold on this team in terms of what we thought we had. And so we're kind of in that position right now. Another glaring stat to me, his slugging percentage. Now you want that to be, you know, at least in the low to upper fours. His slugging percentage, I just lost him.
Here it's 324 in the last 30 games.
It's 288 since the All-Star break.
Oof. My goodness.
OPS of 539. So not getting it done. And one of the other things I would have said about Devers, even if he didn't go to first, you're not getting all of those ground balls to first and second base that you're getting from Yoshida right now, who is just absolutely giving you nothing just about. He did drive in one or two the other night, but he's going to do that every 13th game probably. So it's just, you know, I'm not saying
no one rolls over on a ground ball better than Yoshida. Nobody. So frustrating.
Just a major negative. But do we have one more hot take? Yeah.
That was it.
All right. Well,
Terry, who's your most improved player in the Sox as a sign off here?
Jeez, you know, I was trying to think of a solid candidate, but it's Bayo, or you could say Giolito as a comeback player in general, I guess. But mm-hmm. You know, has Duran improved? No, not that you were expecting him
he's regressed.
He's definitely regressed. Connor Wong's regressed. Narvaez is a rookie, so that doesn't count. Abreu has been about maybe he's improved actually offensively.
I think he's improved. The injury in the last month killed his momentum.
Yeah,
obviously.
So I guess you can make a case there for Abreu, but it's Bayo all day. You could throw one more in. There's one more you can make a case for, and it shouldn't be the biggest shocker, but Whitlock has had a very good year. Now that he's finally had a defined role, which he could thrive in. So
I would say he's more of like
Story would be another one for comeback player of the year type of thing with Giolito. Story's year really is special when you put in how bad or how unavailable he's been for the preceding 2 or 3 years.
True.
Yeah. Story's comeback player of the year. I mean, Giolito's Giolito's not an everyday player. I mean, the fact that Story went from literally not being able to play more than like 10 games a season, seemingly, to almost playing a full season shortstop every day for this team with this craziness. Yeah, it's comeback player of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we will be back tomorrow night. Totally different crew. I don't think any of the three of us are on. It's Jason, Nick, and Doug will have the first game of the Toronto series, and it's a big game, so we'll see what happens there. Big week, I know. I'll be back for the third game of it, and then game one of Detroit. So we'll see what happens. Everybody have a great Tuesday. Take care.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this. Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.